Well, good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the second day of December, 2018. My name is Peter Wickham. I'm here with Mr. Dennis Johnson, and we are with you together until 1:30 p.m. We do hope that you will stay with us and that you will call and you will interact on the various media that are provided. Of course, you can call us on 434-1790. You can also reach us on 233-IVOB. That's 266, I'm sorry, 266-IVOB. Those are the, that's the WhatsApp number. Then you can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. That's peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. And I look forward to hearing from you during the course of this morning and to having a good conversation that will keep us all excited on the edge of our seats. So first things first, birthday, happy belated birthday greetings to two very important people in my life. Let's start with the Honorable Prime Minister, Mia Mottley, who celebrated her birthday yesterday. Happy belated greetings. And of course, I, among many other thousands, offered birthday greetings yesterday. And the other important person, of course, is the former Minister of Finance, Mr. Christopher Sinclair. I always thought it was one of the most cruelest of ironies that we had the Minister of Finance and the Shadow Minister of Finance celebrating their birthdays on the same day. And I am happy to have been able to number both of them among my friends. And I would want to wish Mr. Sinclair, wherever you are or whatever you're doing, a happy 51st birthday. And Miss Motley is a year or two older than Chris is, and also a year or two older than I am. But Chris and I share a year in common. So happy 51st to you, Mr. Sinclair. And I do hope that you will join us on the program at some point in time in the very near future, because there are so many out there who love you and want to hear from you. So that will be a good thing. Next up, question of the International Monetary Fund agreement. We had a staff level agreement some weeks ago. It was formalized yesterday. I believe it is one of the more speedy IMF agreements that has probably set a record in terms of negotiation to completion. I want to congratulate the Prime Minister and her team unreservedly for having been able to put that in place hastily. Many people spoke to me over the past few days were expressing some level of surprise at the speed with which it was done. And I, too, want to acknowledge the fact that the government hit the ground running. They got to work. They clearly had a plan, and they have implemented that plan. And we shall now have IMF funds being made available to us. Of course, it is not without controversy. You know, the 1981 IMF agreement, standby agreement, required some level of disruption. We had some level of disruption in the public service. Of course, the 1991 agreement was far more harsh. We had not only a level of disruption in the public service, but we also had an 8% cut, and that was fairly severe. Both of them were without devaluation. Both of them required some level of layoffs. The 2018 plan is an interesting one because this is a plan that appears to focus, in addition to the laying off of public servants and efficiency in the public service, also does not have a component of devaluation. But it seems to rely or lean heavily on the holders of government debt to reorganize that debt. And I think that the 1991 plan did not have a component like this because, of course, the debt at the time was not as high. So it was really a question of cutting and shaving from the public service and also increasing investment. This one would appear to have that component, which is also one of the more controversial parts, where we're asking holders of Barbados government debt to roll that debt over and also to take what could be considered a haircut in terms of the level of expectation regarding the debt that they would expect to have been repaid. Now, I have to admit, I am not a holder of government debt. I am fortunate, or unfortunate as the case may be, not to have had vast sums to invest over the last few years, so I would not be in that position. But I can also identify, especially with some of the pensioners that would have used government paper as a way to invest their life savings and are now facing the reality that they will have to have their payments deferred and in many instances, they will get less from their investment than they expected. As I said, I can see with them and I can understand, but I also appreciate that this is something which had to happen. And I continue to argue that had we started this process in 2013, when we should have started this process, we would probably not be having this conversation now. I remember a conversation in 2013 where we were asking the former Minister of Finance about the idea of going to the International Monetary Fund and negotiating an agreement, especially as the Credit Suisse loan, is due for, my apologies, the Credit Suisse loan is one that was taken after 2013, and that one was a fairly substantial loan that required a fairly high level of commitment regarding repayment. And that one was one that we perhaps could have avoided if we took an IMF agreement earlier. The Minister of Finance at the time was making the point that we did not go to the International Monetary Fund because he was absolutely sure that they would demand a devaluation. What we have now discovered, having gone to the IMF some 5 years later, is that clearly it was possible for a government, maybe not that one, but a government to negotiate an IMF agreement in short order without requiring any kind of devaluation. And it was clearly possible, notwithstanding the fact that we were assured it was impossible. But that is perhaps one of many things that we would have been misled on in the past, and I'm happy that we are where we are now. So to those of you who are holding government debt, whether you be banks, whether you be individuals, and who are concerned, what I would say is that, you know, we all have to make an effort to make this thing work, and I think that that is part of the sacrifice that we will all be required to bear going forward. You know, you will get your money if you are in the older age group. I can appreciate your concern that you are in your 80s or 90s even, and the question is what happens, you know, and that is something which requires a bit of explanation. There's no question about that requiring some amount of explanation. But in the meantime, I think we're happy to be where we are now, and I could say that we have a fairly clear path going forward. We have to look at debt. We will need to hear shortly about the trimming of the public service and reorganization of state agencies. That will perhaps be also very controversial, and I imagine that that will be rolled out in fairly short order. And I think that from January, we will have a fairly clear idea of where we're going. And then we have, which is the best part, we have a full 4 years to begin the hard work of putting this country back together. And that's what's important. Where do I sit in all of this? And I've said repeatedly that I'm happy to be in a capacity that supports Barbados. And I think that that is the position that the entire STARCOM team has taken, that we support Barbados and we want to see Barbados work. And if we have a government that has a plan that the public is supporting, then we're happy to be there with them to see if we can make it work. Nonetheless, we will continue to raise questions where questions come up, and we will continue to try to get those questions answered as we did yesterday and as we have done on previous occasions. I think I made reference to the fact that today was the second day of December. It is the second day of October. Let's not rush the brush. Although, when one listens to the Christmas music being played on the radio, one would assume that it is December. But let's be assured that it is now only October. And I know the Christmas music excites so many of you. I have to admit that I am not a fan. And it probably has a lot to do with the fact that I don't celebrate Christmas myself. But nonetheless, I live in a democracy in which the majority rules, and if it is that the majority want Christmas music, then Christmas music they shall have. 434-1790, let's say good morning and welcome to the first caller. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, ma'am? Yes, ma'am.
I am blessed. You blessed too?
I think I'm blessed, yeah.
You sure?
I think so.
Okay. This is the lady that called the day about the ramp where the water works, they dig up the side of the road and leave my mom ramp blocked.
Yes, that's right. You talked about that last
good
week.
Good. I could have called the program from Tuesday down to yesterday, but I did not. I was waiting on you.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good or a bad thing?
But you can take it however you want to take it. But I know that I don't disrespect men, because men is my heart. Mm-hmm. I don't keep women friends, just a few. I make a countdown on my little finger. But I love men. Mm-hmm. I don't care who read into it. I love men. So I'm keeping this one for you. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, right, heard my voice on the radio and call me and tell me that you did not treat me well. You understand? But the next day, I get, my phone was ringing the whole day. People that know me and people that don't even know me call my phone the whole day. I can't even rest. And by the Tuesday evening after 4 o'clock, minutes to five, it was already finished. Another thing, let me tell you something. You see, the representative for St. Thomas, I had a situation here 2 years ago. She was not in where she is now. And I called her, and she come here to me and sit down in my room. She couldn't do anything at the time. But she told me where, when, and how to go about it. And I did, and the next day, I had my problem done solved, because it was a depressing problem that I had. If I had to call her 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, she could have get here. She will, or she will call. You understand me? I ain't a Dems, not I ain't a Bees, because the Dems don't wake me up. The Bees don't wake me up. Only Almighty that has put breath. Put breath in me, that I can get up.
Ma'am, where are we going with this conversation? Did I not suggest to you that you should call? But I asked that question last week.
No. You just wear two suits and two hats. You just wear a
Ma'am, I ain't
hat.
I'm sorry. I ain't going down this road with you, look. Ma'am, I'm happy that you had your problem resolved. If you recall, I did say to you last week, why don't you call the representative for St. Thomas? If you have had good experiences with her and the boss, I'm happy to hear that. No, I suggested to you that had you called her, the matter would have been resolved. You told me there were important reasons why you did not want to call her and get her involved. Ma'am, suffice to say, I am happy that this week your issue has been resolved. The ramp has been repaired. The BWA has done what they should do. Everybody is happy. There's no reason for us to pursue this matter any further, ma'am. I want to thank you so much for your call. I want to wish you God's blessings for the rest of the day, the rest of the week, and for a wonderful weekend. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Yes, morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all.
Good.
I must laugh, though. Anyhow.
Why are you laughing? You laughing at me or with me?
No. I remember that caller who said that you and I was dark and foolish then. You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Anyhow, now let me start off on a good note. First, I must tell you, despite the fact that you named the wrong month, that during Christmas time, there's always a good feeling, you know that?
A good feeling for you? Well, I guess it's a good feeling everywhere,
it's a good feeling to people around Christmas.
Well, I feel that way every day, so.
So, don't forget, we just came out of election that left people feeling good.
How you feel during crop over?
I don't be involved in crop over.
Well, I get the Christmas feeling for crop over. Okay. So I would be glad if we had a crop over in October.
Okay.
Or a crop over in January. So give me 2-3 crop overs a year. And the Christmas, I you know. But that's not my thing. Anyhow.
Yeah, alright, let me go on. I must join you and send out belated birthday greetings to my Prime Minister.
Okay. What about your former opposite Minister of Finance?
Our current Minister of Agriculture, and not the Minister of Agriculture, or caller, that this caller say he's Mr. Agriculture.
All right, bro. Yeah. No. Do my friend too bad.
Listen, I felt so proud this morning after hearing the 830. Or the lineup to the 30, the Sadi car. When the name Marcia Cattle was mentioned, that was involved in this program with the IMF. Mm-hmm. You know why I felt good? I spoke on a platform with her. And let me tell you something. I was introduced to her father, and then I said, you know what? I know your brother. Her brother went to school with me at Western Georgia, a fellow by the name of a Trent Cattle. But he used to run for the school at Western Georgia, Chester Cattle. Chester Cattle. And when I saw this insignificant looking young lady, you ever met her?
Who, Marcia Cattle?
Yeah.
But I like Marcia Cattle bad.
But you know, she looked real insignificant, small.
One could say diminutive. Her stature is diminutive. But the hair makes up for the stature because the hair gives the presence.
But listen, sir, I
have been I have to admit, right, that I am a fan of Marcia. Thing is my number one lady in politics now. Well, I mean, you sent me a motley aside, but she's not a young lady in politics now. She is she's matured. But I have always liked Santia Bradshaw. But when I met Marcia Cattle, I have to admit, I was very impressed. She has a cool, very calm way of delivering.
This is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
This is what I'm getting
at. I'm a fan, I have to admit.
Right.
Yeah.
When I saw her, I said to myself, this young lady, I ain't so sure yet if she could really beat Seeley.
Mm-hmm.
But let me hear what she has to say. Fortunate for me, I was the next speaker that was introduced after her.
Mm-hmm.
That lady left me in a state to wonder, how could some person have so much within her and look so insignificant? And I'm saying this morning that the people in St. Michael South Central should be very proud of what they did on the 24th of May, of removing not everybody that looked like somebody, but the real representative. And that is Marcia Cattle. And I feel proud to hear the significant role that she played in the IMF. I am thankful for that.
I am too. And let me just let you in on a bit of information, which I don't know, it's not in the public domain, but I can say no because that time has passed. Marcia's polling early on in her constituency was suggestive of the fact that there were many people who she did not impact on. Because, truth be told, around the October period, before the elections were called, Marcia was trailing Richard Seeley. And I think a big part of the problem was that a lot of people did not have the opportunity to speak to her, to interact with her, and to have the level of interaction that you had. And I think many people saw her as being slight, politically slight.
Exactly, right. I said that.
And, you know, it is proof that you give a person the opportunity, because I noted that after the October period passed, she hit the ground. She was in the constituency. She had some distinguished support, and she was knocking on doors and pressing flesh. And as people got to know her more, then she moved forward. I would say she surged ahead. And it was a significant victory. But what I like more about her, when I spoke about the speech that she made in Parliament recently, is the fact that she is determined to make her mark on politics as a different type of politician. And my feeling is that she is not somebody who's going to walk about in the constituency and give in money and that kind of bottle gas and that kind of thing. Her thing seems to be, look, let me make an impact and let me improve the well-being of people in my constituency, not by giving out vouchers, but by making things better in a global sense.
I want to deal with that issue of vouchers and finance.
Somebody did raise it, huh?
At the end of my contribution.
Okay.
But let me raise my observation that I am very uncomfortable with. Our country is over 50 years of independence. And we brag a lot about our educational standard and how high it is. After hearing the manager, I don't know if he's Holloway, or whatever they call him, from Trinidad, speaking about the hurricane and how he had prepared with these water tanks that he had, and listen to what he said, that is stored at St. Andrew's Factory.
I know St. Andrew had a trailer factory. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I made mention of those tanks that was at Andrew's factory long before election and asked what they was doing there. You could believe that in today's age, we have this gentleman who managed the water authority, and we have a strong educational background. We have the gentleman at the hospital, and we have a strong educational background. And last but not least, the consultant that you just sent from Transport Board. It begs me to ask a question. How could a country that went into independence cannot find people educated enough to manage these affairs of this country? We had a gentleman by the name of Nicky Seeley at Water Authority. He had retired.
No, Nicky Seeley died, but I'm talking about where did, I think his son is now posted in one of the other Caribbean islands.
Okay, all right. All right, let me complete what I am saying.
No, I'm just saying to you, I understand where you're coming from, where the consultants are concerned, but just bear in mind that I'm a person who also makes a living up and down the region.
I always
make the point that if I'm going to leave Barbados and go and work in somebody else's country, somebody else got to leave and come and work here.
I have no problem with that.
If the best talent is in Trinidad, then go to Trinidad for it. If the best talent is in Grenada, go to Grenada for it.
But the fact remains that you have a unique profession.
But maybe Holloway does too.
And the fact remains that I'm telling you that water authority management and a unique thing.
But how you know?
All right, let me finish.
Pumping water is a specialized skill.
To who? All right, listen to this. If you listen to the program, then after the hurricane and he was interviewed, he said he had water tanks at Andrews and they had some around the country in case of the hurricane. You know very well, Peter, that those water tanks came about when we had this water shortage. How can you come back to the public and tell me that this water tank was for hurricane, and you can tell me that a water tank that set up side of the road, nothing to tie them down into the ground, and tell me that a hurricane come and them could have stayed?
Fill them with water. If they're full with water, then they're going to move. But then I crash the fool in me. If they're full with water, they can't take it.
Let me go ahead and
back. Bring it home now, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to finish off now.
Yeah.
This thing about polling and giving out these funds and such like and basket of goods.
I said vouchers.
You could recall that I told you.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to remember, I am a practical analyst where you're the theoretical analyst. You remember the confrontation that you and I had on this air pertaining to those housing areas that Bill and Valerie and Sutherland, and I told you they're going to come back to destroy the Democratic Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
I told you the reason why when I tell you that those people, those areas have to look for finance to buy everything they want, and the pressure is going to hit them, and you start telling me about you could grow things in windows and all sorts of like, you remember that?
Grow things in windows?
Yeah, you start talking about people that grow things in windows and all sorts of like, when they said there was no way to plant food.
Oh, okay.
You can't remember that?
Yeah, you could grow things in, but they could still grow things in windows.
Well, they could grow them now too. But I told you that the pressure is going to hit those people, and the Democratic Labour Party is going to get wiped out in those same areas during to that gerrymandering. It was a state of planting people in order to vote in St. Michael. And it did the same thing that I told you. And last, I can make a recommendation to my government. And I want the Minister of Health and the Minister of Education to take this serious. I want to see an effort placed on what took place at Louis Lynch School. If you had to spend $2 or $3 million to brain scientists to find out what caused the building to shut down and get that building going, and St. Joseph Hospital. Then my two recommendations for this new
government. St. Joseph Hospital?
The St. Joseph Hospital.
I said, Joseph, you went up there recently?
I don't know.
Then gone up there to speak of?
Well, something got to be done about the property.
The property could sell, but there's nothing in the property.
You got to do something, but because we cannot keep idle land. If a hotel or somebody want to invest it,
Well, maybe that can happen, but if you go up there and you look at that building, there's no St. Joseph Hospital to speak of.
I don't think
that building has any value any longer.
But you don't think that is a shame to any government? I don't care.
Sir, ain't no more shame.
Sir,
it's no more shame than the welfare building in Bay Street. It's no more shame than the old hospital that I pass by every day and see
in
the condition it is. The condition of several buildings that are owned by government that have value is shameful, but it is what it is.
But I want my Prime Minister to take look and let us look at assets and try to build this country.
There needs to be a complete, as you said, I think that they need to have maybe a commission to look at buildings and lands that are disused. And all across Barbados, there's plantations, several plantations that have been abandoned. There is the same building I talk about, you know, there are abandoned houses, but a lot of them are abandoned buildings that government own. The prison is falling into that category now as one of those buildings that government own that has been abandoned. They have police stations dotted around the place that are no longer being used that again have been abandoned. And why I mention the welfare building is because that building is a beautiful property, beachfront. That building has tremendous potential and value, and I find it the way it is sitting down now is scandalous. Right across the road from it, can you imagine the kind of housing development that the old hospital building could be? You know, in the same way that you have developed the barracks. And now I mentioned the barracks, I passed by the CXC building right in front of the thing, and the CXC building has now fallen into that kind of disrepair as well. But a little further up the road, you have this fancy housing facility for people that into that kind of old buildings and bricks and things. It's not my style, but there are people who like it, who like that type of building. And if you look at the old barracks up beyond the restaurant, you see the potential that could become of the CXC building. And those people in there pay a lot of money to live there. So I do feel, sir, that we need to have some kind of intervention where those buildings are concerned, because the condition a lot of them are in is scandalous. The fact that you're looking at valuable property that is just lying idle, and I believe it could be either sold or auctioned, and it could bring some revenue in for government. Final word from you, sir.
Well, I am looking forward, and as I said before, this is a government with a difference, and I feel satisfied as it's again complete on how it started. You remember I told you I was going into St. Lucie and into St. John. And the last time that I met Andy Henry, a certain place, when he, like you, was talking about 27 and 23, I told him, as long as I get St. Lucie and St. John, I got all 30. And I'm a happy man this morning. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. We'll take a break and come right back. Welcome back. We're on 434-1790. Good morning and welcome.
Great, Hans Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, Marcia. How are you doing? My other favorite, Marcia.
Marcia, no, you've got to find the third one.
Don't mind, I love the other one. There's still space in my heart.
Even though you
and I have disagreed recently on a few things, but...
We have?
Oh, of course we have.
Why have we disagreed?
But we won't go there. No, you know, I never really supported the attack on my favorite prime minister in the region, but... You know.
Oh, yes. Let's leave that here. We can agree and disagree
still, but
yes, we can. Of course.
I think your general philosophy is one that I support, but I guess we all make mistakes.
We all do. We'll move along.
Fair enough.
Right. A couple of weeks ago, we would have started a discussion about the credit union, and I thought it was pertinent at this time for me to give an update of some things that have been happening. So some of the members, due to the concerns that we had, decided to trigger a bylaw within the public workers set of bylaws, which allows the general membership to call a special meeting to have discussions on any issues that are of concern to them. Now, when I started the process, I perhaps didn't even realize how important that trigger under the bylaw was. I think I only really understood that that's the only mechanism that we as members have to try to protect ourselves and understand what is going on with our credit union at this point in time, after I would have sent a piece of correspondence to the Financial Services Commission and was told in the official reply that because they advise the board of the credit union, they can't engage with the concerns of individual members of the credit union. So basically, this special meeting that we are allowed to have by the bylaws of the credit union is really one of the only mechanisms that we have then to make sure that our concerns are answered and that, you know, the issues within the credit union are clarified. So on August the 31st, we would have sent the first demand letter to have the meeting convened. We got a response indicating that we had not secured the 50 signatures needed to trigger the process. So we went back into the field, we canvassed more, and we added additional signatures. On the 6th of September, I, as the representative for the group of concerned members, was summoned to meet with a section of the board of the credit union. We did that, and I think the major thing there was that that was the opportunity that they used to tell us that we hadn't met the signatures requirement and that we had to continue to garner signatures, which we did. We resubmitted the demand for a meeting on September the 24th, making sure that we had the requisite additional signatures. Actually, we have more than we now need, and we didn't get a response from the board. So yesterday, I would have sent a follow-up email, and we got a letter in response to that follow-up email where we were told that although we now have the signatures, that our agenda items for the calling of the meeting were not clear enough. Now, the issues that we have outlined as the reason for calling the meeting are, I think, quite self-explanatory, and I think are in line with what the legislation asked us to do. We would have indicated that we are asking for the meeting because we have concerns as members, and we would have outlined three specific things that we wanted to have discussed at the meeting. The proposed restructure of the Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union, the request by a former supervisory committee for a forensic audit to be done of the credit union, and any and all other matters raised by members relating to the decision-making and money prudence within the credit union. So those are the three agenda items that we would have outlined in terms of the meeting, but we were told that those are not specific enough. The overall Credit Union Act in 87, 1, 2, and 3 would clearly outline that we are supposed to specify why we want the meeting. And we think we've comfortably done that, and we're just waiting now. We would have sent back to the board, and we would have indicated that we feel like we've met the requirement of specifying, as I just outlined to you, the three reasons why we want the meeting. And we are awaiting the credit union, the board's response, hopefully the response that we think that the matter should have, and that we will have our special meeting shortly. So I just wanted, by way of updating the public, to let them know that that is where we are with respect to the special meeting. And I would hope that all of the membership of the credit union comes out and pays attention so that they are in a position to understand fully where their credit union is. I don't think I have to remind anybody in Barbados where we are financially. And with the bond issues now having been, income from that having now been reduced, we are thinking that perhaps the credit union is where some of the fallout, some of the people with the fallout are going to be knocking on the doors of the credit union to see, you know, what kind of services can be extended to them. We want to make sure that our credit union is in the position to do that. So we would love for members to come out and to hear what is going on and to ask questions and air any concerns that they may have.
When is this likely to be?
We resubmitted the request, the demand request for the meeting on the 24th of September. The board is supposed to, within 20 days of that notice, give notice of the meeting and to fully make sure that that notice is available by the various media and by various methods, identify and let individuals, members know when the meeting is supposed to be. So we're waiting on them to do that. Like I said, they would have indicated by letter yesterday that they did not feel that our outline of the agenda was specific enough. We wrote back. We indicated that we feel it is specific enough. They're supposed to come back to us by the 4th of October, which is Thursday, with a date for the meeting. And so we're just, like I said, asking everybody. We don't yet know when it is, but anytime from Thursday this week, we should have a clear indication of when that meeting is going to be and where it will take place.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good. And I'm happy to let you use our facilities to keep the public of Barbados informed. Credit union is essentially our route to financial democracy in Barbados. So it's important that you keep the line of communication open, all right? Okay, Alex McDonald just wrote me a note and he said, Peter, Mr. Halliday is a Barbadian and he was educated at Harrison College largely because he was unable to gain acceptance to Christchurch Foundation School. He came from over and away at a very young age and that's the accent, but he is a Barbadian who went to Harrison College because he couldn't get into Foundation. Another note I have from Wayne tells me that Hugh Seeley is in Grenada at the St. George's University. And that was my expectation. And I was just making the point that, you know, in the same way that you express concern about a Trinidadian coming to Barbados to work, Hugh Seeley is an example of a distinguished Barbadian who has gone to Grenada and he's working in a fairly substantial post. So as I was saying to the gentleman just now, I usually have a very short fuse where conversations about Caribbean people living or working in Barbados are concerned, because I do feel that this part of the fabric. I see a note here from Mr. McDonald. Well, he started, but he didn't continue typing. I think that my foundation comment threw him a bit. So as he regains his composure, we'll see how that goes. Dr. Brastacks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing? This is Patrick?
Of course it is.
Good to hear you.
Now, Peter, this morning I want to speak to you on a few issues, but let me join you in congratulating or expressing happy belated
birthday
to the Prime Minister Barbara, first female, first to have 36, and first to be able to get an IMF program out and running within short order. There are a lot of other firsts, but I would just mention those three.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to, before I get to my substantive point, I want to make a request of the Honorable William Duguid, Minister responsible for Transport, Works, and Maintenance, to pay close attention, Peter, to the Lower Green bus terminal. I am dissatisfied as a citizen of this country relative to how these people are treated, their location in relation to them positioning themselves to catch a bus to and from their journey. I think that something has to be done in that area. And let me remind the listening public that this was constructed under a Barbados Labour Party government. So I think the Barbados Labour Party now has the way at all to fix this problem. It cannot be fair, it cannot be reasonable, neither can it be right for hardworking individuals in this country to be placed at the mercy of the elements down there in that Lower Green bus stand, especially when there is heavy downpour of rain.
You mean the Lower Green or the Pelican bus stand?
The Pelican, they call it the Lower Green.
Okay.
Because it was moved from courts and taken on there. So in other words,
but that is the Lower Green.
Yeah, Lower Green.
Which is now a park.
My issue, Peter, is that when they were moved from in front there by courts, they were at the mercy of the elements.
And I agree with you. So you're saying the Pelican bus stand needs repairs. It needs looking at.
You need to have it in a manner that is conducive for the commuters to be able to come and wait for their respective buses to take them to their journey. It can't be fair. It can't be right to them, Peter.
You don't think that one of the solutions is to expand the facilities at the Pelican bus stand and to merge the private and public together?
Because we have a
stepchild thing where the main transport board terminals have always been relatively decent with bathroom facilities and whatnot. And then you got a yard for the PSVs.
Yeah, but we have enough space down there. Somebody can conceptualize some kind of plan that will incorporate the commuters where they can be shielded from the
I agree with you. If you want people to behave properly, you have to treat them properly. And I think that part of the reason that you have this level of indiscipline is you turn them in the yard. If you give them a nice courtyard out of which to operate, then hopefully the behavior would improve.
We can demand the behavior of them, right? The next thing I want to say is that I want to commend the government, Peter, for their starting process as it relates to the Crest Note to effectively communicate. I'm happy that my call have not fallen on deaf ears. The government is now effectively communicating, whereby persons now can understand what is their mission and their goal and their strategy going forward. I'm happy for that. But I want now to speak, Peter, to this whole issue of the bond instruments and holders of government debt and so on, because I listened to the program yesterday and I became a bit bewildered, right? I haven't heard a lot of the comments coming from certain quarters yesterday, and some of them would have chosen the moderator, and I don't think that David was facetious. I think that he was trying to accommodate everybody in an attempt to hear what they had to say and what their views were. But the bottom line is that the Dems intend to take this and believe that they can confuse ordinary right-thinking Barbadians in this country. So I come this morning to set the record straight, Peter. And this is setting the record straight. This is the point I want to make. That if you have an illness, Peter, that you were apprised of by several doctors, and you continue to delay any treatment for the illness for which was brought to your attention, and you go find yourself flat on your back, decide now that you will now seek the doctor, whatever remedy or medication or anything that is prescribed by the doctor that caused you pain cannot be the problem of the doctor. It has to be the problem of the patient, bottom line. The point I am making here, right, is that the last administration for 10 years continue to kick the can down the road. You remember Keith Mitchell? Immediately after Keith Mitchell won the government in 2013, having understood the state of the Grenada's economy, he journeyed to the IMF, and long before he went back to the people again in 2018, he had already came out to the IMF program. The point that you want to make this morning, Peter, and it must be made because nobody won't make the point, is that every single pain and torture and hurt that has come about as a direct result of anything that was done by the new elected administration in the last 3 months can be directly traced to the mismanagement of the Democratic Labour Party while they were in office. So let me stop the foolish talk in this country about I understand the
Patrick,
pain.
Who disagree with you?
No, because they got some supporters who believe. Who trying to come to confuse, believe that they can confuse
much people,
all the right.
How much people? Three people.
Right, because they can't confuse anybody in this country. They're
Patrick, it's painfully obvious to me that what you're saying is true. We knew that we had a problem in Barbados since 2013, and as you made the point, in Grenada, Mitchell's strategy for dealing with his crisis, the debt, and also is almost identical to this strategy that they're using. Identical to the point that they have the same financiers, the same white people that are dealing with the debt. So it is clear to me that there are similarities, and I think I agree with you entirely that we understand that the pain that we are experiencing now is because we didn't go earlier. When you have a cancer and you can nip it in the bud, you know, it's less painful, but now we have to go on chemotherapy as a country simply because we did not deal with the cancer when it was superficial.
Precisely, but
a loss we hear is you saying all kind of thing.
Okay. But I want to also. I want
everybody
to also
gonna be walking about looking like Dennis.
I want to also make this point that the former Minister of Finance said that they could not have entered any arrangement with the International Monetary Fund simply because that one of their quests would be to devalue the dollar.
That's exactly what he said.
Let me say this, Peter. Let me say this to you, right? Now that can be entirely true, as they won the government on May the 25th because they were not in a position to properly negotiate, as we had seen with our current Prime Minister. So whatever would have been thrown at them, they would accept. Let me explain to the people of this country this morning, Peter, that when the Prime Minister sat on the table with the members of the International Monetary Fund, she let them know up front that even though Barbados is down, it is not out. We come looking for handouts, we come looking for assistance. So the record was set straight in relation to the dollar bank. The record was set straight. But it takes astute leadership, and it takes people with a firm statistical fortitude. I know you don't like to hear that word, Peter.
Patrick, if it's me and Molly we talking about, it can't be got to be ovarian fortitude.
Ovarian fortitude.
It can't say testicular fortitude.
You have to have people with guts who are willing to... If you heard the speech of the Prime Minister at the recently concluded UN, when she referred to Arbar's speech about satellites what's it again?
And the friends of all satellites and none.
Satellites and then because that we are done and we come and find our position seven, a position that we are done, doesn't mean that we can accept what you offer. So that's why I never had any fear. In the Barbados' currency bank, I would have had fear if the Democrat Labour Party had won back the election simply because that is the route that they would have gone. I'm telling you, that's the route that they would have gone. But I want to tell Barbados, and those particularly who are now suffering as a direct result of the bond instruments, where government has to make certain decisions, I understand the interest dialogue. I mean, I'm not a bondholder, but I share the pain, I understand the pain. But the bottom line is, anytime you believe they can portion blame, carry the blame and lay at the feet of the Democrat Labour Party. Because if they weren't borrowing so much money from the NIS without not repaying it, and borrowing money all from the domestic market and all kind of nonsense, and created a whole set of confusion in this country as it relates to the economy, we would not have been witnessing what is currently there. So this thing about I heard a caller yesterday about as fast as we get the loan from the IMF, the government get the loan from the IMF, we must get the flip side to what the government had to do. And some caller talking about 1%. It can't be at 1%. Why the IMF can't lend Barbados money at 1% interest?
Patrick, would you be interested in hearing the perspective of former Minister of Finance Chris Sinclair on all of this?